Art of Molecule Podcast
Engineering Life and Us
Michelle, we are in the middle of our project Engineering Life and Us, and you and your team have spent hours in our labs, met with our researchers and discussed and of course recorded hours and hours of material. Do you already know what the final product is going to look like? Or is it going to change? Or are you unsure?
I think as all projects, we have a vision how you want things, how you imagine things to look. So I have a overall frame that is very clear. If not, I could not start the project. But engineering life, and I go as far as the universe or our universe we move in shifts a lot, like the times have shifted a lot in the last 6 months. So I always go to back to the research. The research is your research and my research, and from there on I create the framework. And that framework has shifted slightly, and it's becomes more clearer, because once you enter that world, it's like when you go to CERN the first time, or when you you get in an object that's highly technological and you think you don't understand it, but then you're introduced in a clever way, you finally start breaking it down and you start understanding it. So I feel over the last months it has become more clear. It's much more visual than I anticipated, because a molecule or an atom or a splitting atom can create an atomic explosion. Who would have thought that splitting an atom can create an atomic explosion? So imagine what I can do with this project. So maybe I create visually something beyond spectacular.
And when you start thinking, or when you started thinking about this project, were you thinking in terms of photography or video or a mixture of multimedia effects and sounds? And how do you conceptualize?
Well, one of the very first questions I ask you, is there any sound in molecular molecular science? And you said, yes, there is sound. And that's already one thing that fascinated me enormously, that you can actually record or actually sense any kind of sound produced by molecular science, which is incredibly inspiring. So that automatically gives me a rhythm to my project. So it's so I'm debating if I would work with any kind of musician or music, and then the first thing that comes in my mind is percussion, and percussion, or but needs to me again. And then it's ultrasounds, echoes. So I start again creating a framework of sound, how I would animate the sound with this. And I had a meeting actually yesterday with somebody extremely interesting. I don't want to mention a name because I don't know if I can get him, but it would be extremely incredible if I could. So that would be very rhythmic with ultrasounds or anything. But again, it's something that slowly is growing.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a purely visual piece of art that you will create. It will be an audio visual piece.
It definitely will be extremely sound related as well, because we are very sensitive already. You have a heart that gives a rhythm, and without the heart there is no life. So the heart already, the different beat of our heart is already a determined fact for this project. But then our heart jumps into many, many beats, and it goes up and down. So that's, and then there is the clashing molecules that, as far as I understood from the scientists, that create sound. So I want to hear more about that, but that automatically will already gave me a very interesting idea about sound.
Our labs, I'm sure, offer an abundance of different sounds and images for your art project. Probably much, much more than you're actually looking for. So how do you filter them and pick out exactly those that match perfectly the Engineering Life and Us concept?
I collect sounds in my mind, but I really attribute the sound when I see the image. So the sound really comes from the image that I have in front of me. And I think there is this one screen that's on my Instagram actually, of that one black image that basically then could create the spine and could create a mini brain. Basically it's really what Engineering Life is all about. About the brainoid as well. So automatically that gives me an impulse how a brain reacts. So the brainoids have been extremely inspiring, and looking at them and being in a room with something that's actually other people would attribute to artificial intelligence, because a brainoid then is connected with AI. So Engineering Life is almost, well, it connects in one form or another to artificial intelligence, or that's exactly where is the ethical limit from Engineering Life to artificial intelligence, where we need to draw the line. So that's another subject that I find extremely interesting, going back to HAL from Kubrick, which is a computer. And then you cannot work without computers. Your laboratories are extremely computerized. So what role does the computer play in science? So, and how is the computer what is the computer going to do with my images and with this installation? How much will I let my computer influence me when I process and when I make this film?
Michel, we've had a lot of discussions about our molecular systems engineering research in the labs and outside the labs, numerous occasions. There have been talks with the NCCR directors, with principal investigators, our PhDs and postdocs. You and I have discussed this research at length over the last couple of months. Has this discourse by any chance influenced your ethical positions about molecular systems engineering research?
I'm an extremely adventurous person, and I believe today we are lost if we don't embrace science. So either we become lost, or we are left behind totally, or we connect with science and technology and use it to our best advantage and try to really go as far that it cannot control us, that we are still in control, that we work hand in hand. And I feel engineering life is really a process of hand in hand science and technology and development. So I think we really depend on it. Also, we need it right now, whether it's helping us find vaccines or giving us a better quality of life, because engineering life can definitely improve our quality of life. Eventually, we can integrate certain elements that I witness myself into our bloodstreams, into our system. They can maybe clean it, or they can enhance it, or they can reduce pain. So I look at this as an incredible attribute for the future, and this is why I'm so fascinated by it.
And so what role do our scientists play in your artwork, Engineering Life and Us? How important are they for this project?
I think what is really interesting, they're all totally different. Some of them are total nerds, some of them are total communicators, and some of them are just they just do what I ask them to do because, well, they know I'm there. But each one, however silent they were or however talkative, it's incredibly inspiring to spend even one minute or one hour with them. And each time I look at the material, and it's totally different each time, and incredibly fascinating and inspiring.
Now, as we speak, we are still months away from the completion of your project, of this project. But can you already see what the final product is going to look and sound like?
I actually think I can see the end. I really think I see the beginning, I see the end, and I see parts in the middle. I have not connected all the dots, but I do see the beginning, and I see the end. I mentioned you splitting an atom, and you're splitting millions of cells, and you're interfering, and you feed them, you nourish them, you recreate them, you manipulate them. So it's a process of manipulation and splitting. So there will be some incredible highlights, and there will be certain very flat areas that can be extremely scary, because you don't want to be flat, you don't want to have a flatliner ever. But often we are close to these moments, so I think silence makes us think. Like, I've spent a lot of time in war zones. I was never afraid when it was loud, but I was always afraid when it got quiet. So maybe it's a similar situation in molecular science. I don't know yet.
Let's briefly talk about the audience of Engineering Life and Us, which is going to be, at least that's what I hope for, the broad and general public, young and old people who are interested to find out what is happening in today's scientific ivory towers, if I may say so. Do you think our art project can help us bridge the communication gap between the sciences and the public?
You know, I never really think about this when I start something. I always hope it will be, but I think the goal is always how everybody has limitations, and whether they're ethical, whether they're financial, whether they are by pure ability, because we all have limited abilities. But the great thing about my work is I always call it collective thinking. So I get the input from lots of places, and I put it all in one pot, and I start brewing it, and then suddenly that becomes it really has no limit, and the only limit again is the one that we set ourselves. Like in life, we can make a choice. Okay, I'm going to do this. It's black and white, but there's many shades between black and white. There's a whole spectrum of color in between. So I think this is an incredible spectrum. So I try to connect the right elements and feed them the right way. And but I have an almost clear vision how everything is looking. Now I need to make things happen, and that has limits as well, because we need to certain things require certain things, and so we have to overcome those little bridges, and then I think this process is incredibly interesting as well, because we cannot stop, because we're in the middle. Once we pass the middle, we cannot stop. We passed basically 1 year now, so we passed the middle, because I want to deliver something by January. So it's 6 months to the 7 months to the finish line. So my work is really starting right now. Yeah.
Will the final product also be your personal moral statement about this research?
I think there is something called a moral responsibility we have. And engineering life and us is an extremely ethical and moral subject, because science allows us to do anything we want. We can maybe have no limits. But then ethics will stop us at one point how far we can go. Science themselves, and we know this from this world, we could theoretically almost clone a human. We already cloned a sheep. So how far can we go, and how far do we want to go? So how far do I want to go with this, and how far will I go? I will definitely challenge my first audition, which is going to be the Vatican. Mm-hmm. And we know the history of the Vatican, and we know the story of the Vatican, and we know the ethical responsibility the Vatican has towards the world. And we know the ethical responsibility we have towards our audience. So I will draw my own line. How far can I go? and how far do I want to go.
But scientists have that moral responsibility too. What makes you think we are responsible? How do you know?
Science today is in a position to do almost anything. We can create, we have created a supercomputer. The supercomputer, if we don't stop it, could basically take over our computers and could eventually control us. Do we want this to happen with engineering life or AI? Now, there is a purely theoretical question, but that's been addressed all the time. What if all this science gets into the wrong hands, like in history, in the past? So what if we go too far and somebody accesses that has more knowledge than we have? So where are we stopping and what is ethical? And I think this is the internal question that we need to ask ourselves. Science is one thing, ethics is the other. Then medicine is one thing, but do we make medicine just for the very rich, or is it just ethical if everybody can benefit from our research? So I believe our number one duty in the world we have today is eradicate poverty. So engineering life needs to be also the incredible success and the incredible progress we've made. The really big question is, will everybody be able to benefit from that? And this is the question I'm asking myself every single day, every day.
Art of Molecule Podcast.
Engineering Life and Us.